Catherine, I'm an addict.
Hi, Catherine.
Ooh, and I'm going to do a bit of that. And then you're probably still not going to hear me very well, are you? Can you hear me at the back?
Yeah.
Wicked. Damn it. That was nearly swearing, wasn't it? I'm going to try and remember not to swear. Yeah, it's really good to be here, actually. Thanks for asking me to come and do this service. And I've not been in this meeting since I stopped doing service here, and it's actually a real sort of a little step on a healing journey to come back through being asked to do service again. So I kind of, because it's a big thing for me, I want to acknowledge that, but it's a funny week to be asked as well. I'm in a very quiet space this week. And the idea of talking to a great big room of people was kind of, yeah, it felt a bit strange. And then I thought, you know what? Actually, I didn't even think, you know, like my experience of NA is that when you get asked to do service, you get asked to do service. And someone said something really beautiful in a meeting yesterday. He talked about when he came into his first meeting, he talked that there was waves of service. You know, there was a greeter on the door and there was someone giving him a cup of tea and there was, you know, people giving him literature. And that's my experience. You know, when I came in, I was absolutely broken. I was at the end of a long, long journey of using, and I'd used every day for a number of years, and I'd not known that I was using every day. Because I was using different drugs, you know. It's that last reading that Andy did, it says really, really clearly that alcohol is a drug, and for me, the fact that I had a favourite drug that wasn't alcohol, but I would use alcohol at work because everyone else did, and I would use alcohol when I was in different countries because it was the only drug I could get, and I would use alcohol at family lunches because it was allowed, you know. And it took me a long, long time to realise that just because I was putting a different thing in my body every day in order to make myself feel different, I was still putting something into my body every day to feel different, you know. I was still using. And yeah, for 10 years I used every day. And the day that I came to my first meeting, I didn't use, you know. And that's, for anyone who's new, that's really, really important to say. You never have to use again. One day at a time, just for today, that's how we do it, you know. As a big group of people here, that's what we get to do, is that we get to stay clean one day at a time. And it's possible for me. It's possible for you, and it's possible for millions of people around this world, you know. There's a lot of people in this room that I know, actually, and there was something that someone said once. It was talking to someone who was, she was really isolated. She's in a city where no one else is, and she's clean through Narcotics Anonymous, but didn't have local meetings. And I remember that she was told, you know, that there are millions of people standing in circles in different rooms around the world saying the Serenity Prayer tonight so that you can go to bed clean. And that's as true today as it is, you know, as it was then, and it will be tomorrow. I firmly believe that Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, because it did. Like, it properly did. It says in the readings about jails, institutions and death, and like, I was such a rubbish addict that I went to work in a jail once and took drugs with me, and only just realised before I went in that maybe I should stash them outside, you know. So, like, my process of using didn't have me banged up, but I'm under no illusion that it couldn't have happened. Like, I took drugs across international borders. I made stupid mistakes like that one. You know, it's luck, not judgment, that kept me out of there. Institutions. One of my family was in an institution. He's not at the moment, but he could easily be again. And he's my little bro, and he's got the same genes as me, you know. And he and I took exactly the same favourite drug, exactly the same favourite drug. And we've got a family history of schizophrenia, and he is now schizophrenic, you know. And I used to go and see him. When he was in a secure ward in a hospital in North East London, like real proper secure ward, you know. And I used to go and see him and be very, very afraid for him and afraid of how he was. And I used to go and get the bus home to the house I lived in with a load of other using addicts. And I used to take the same drugs that put him there, you know. And I did that every night. You know, it was luck, not judgment, that meant that I wasn't in that institution. Or actually not luck, but higher power. But I'll talk about that a bit more in a minute. I used to have a lot of guilt about that as well, actually. It's been a whole, like, part of why this 2 weeks is quite a big, is big stuff for me, is that I'm continued to be writing a massive step four. There are as many different ways of working these steps, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, as there are addicts in Narcotics Anonymous around the world. However, mine seems to be absolutely massive, my step four, and, you know, this, I've got a thing and it's called hypervigilance, and it means that I remember absolutely everything in order to feel safe. And I tell you what, it's so exhausting in terms of, I wish I was one of them people that had come into recovery like 21 so that I would have like 8 years less of all of this rubbish to write down. But you know what, I'm lucky to be alive and I'm lucky that I came in when I did. But the stuff that I'm doing step four at the moment is really, really big stuff for me. Like, it's in this amazing book, What Is on the Table, which is our basic text. And for anyone who's new, like, get one. You know when you were using and you wanted the properly good drugs? This is the properly good literature. And like, really. And there are people who get clean just by reading this, you know, whether they're in a jail, whether they're in an isolated place. Yeah, it's amazing. And my first sponsor used to say to me, read a chapter every day, and if you can't read a chapter, just read a page. And I've continued to read it regularly throughout my recovery. And what I'm doing at the moment, actually, is I'm reading a paragraph a day, because it's so rich, you know, and I read different stuff each time. And yeah, and kind of in a bit like the Just for Today meditation book that we have, you know, I sat up, you see, it all went wrong. Yeah, just like that meditation book, I read a paragraph of it and just try and really think about it, because actually it goes in, you know, and it's, the literature's really where it's at for me in a lot of ways. Why was I telling you that? Oh, step four, there's something in step four in that book where it talks about fear around step four, and it talks about, like, for me, the stuff that I'm dealing with at the moment is absolutely the stuff that I believe that if any of you knew about it, never mind my amazing sponsor who takes me through this stuff and who I have, you know, who I've developed a relationship with, but if I told anyone in the whole world, then not only would it somehow become knowledge that everything was my fault and I'd be a really bad person, but that I'd be destroyed. Like, it's massive stuff, and it's big to the point of, it's big to the point of when I did my step three, and I've done three step threes with three different sponsors, but with this one, some of it came up, and she and I just made a decision that I got to go to therapy about it, because it was just stuff that, like, it felt like the right thing to do. And so that process of therapy and step four, and also starting to do yoga, that's really weird, I know, but anyway, starting to do yoga, has just meant that what I'm in at the moment is I'm in just this huge grieving process, you know, like massive, absolutely massive. And and it's a gift that properly hurts, you know. I was at home, I was sharing on a Skype meeting the other day with some really close friends, actually, but who were in different places around the world, because this is a worldwide fellowship. And I just had this moment of just, like, it was raining outside, and just that kind of feeling of forgiveness and that kind of feeling, like, of the feeling that I've had each time I've worked a step, actually, that just something is lifting and that I'm getting lighter. Because my experience is that whilst I was using, what I did was I absolutely tried my best to cope with everything. And that I took things on, and I buried things, and I carried things with me. And what happened, thank you, Jay, what happened was was all of that stuff went into the spiritual void that I ended up with when I came into recovery. When I came in, like, I knew that I'd used drugs every day. Well, I didn't know, I was explaining that before, but I knew that I had a problem. I thought I had a problem with one drug. Someone had come up to me at a homeless shelter one Christmas a year and a half before and suggested that I might want to go to an NA meeting. Now, it took me a year and a half to get there, you know, but that seed was planted. And for anyone who's doing service, any kind of outreach service, whether it's PI or HNI or whatever in NA at the moment, thank you, you know, because that's what brings people into these meetings. But when I came into... I'm really lost today. My brain's kind of all over the place. It's really weird. When I came into that first meeting, what actually carried me in was that black hole. Like, it felt like a black hole. It felt like I'd built up so many walls and barriers in order to keep the world out. You know, I hadn't made eye contact with anyone for 2 years before I came into my first meeting. Like, and I hadn't really noticed either. But it was that black hole that brought me in. And actually what I experienced that first day was I experienced a whole big room, quite a small room of people compared with this one, admittedly, but a room of people filled with people exactly like the ones I'd been searching out to use with, you know, exactly like those people. But you all had something different going on, and you had this glow thing and this what I would now call serenity thing, and I wanted some of it, you know. And at the end of that meeting, I picked up a white keyring. I'd said during that meeting, my name's Catherine, I'm an addict. And it was the first time I'd said it, and then I cried my eyes out, you know. It was a real, like, admission of what had been going on, because I hadn't known. I had not known for all of those years. I just thought that I was a bad person, you know. Turns out I wasn't. Turns out we've got a disease, and it's called addiction. And there's that spiritual bit that I was talking about. And it's physical and it's mental as well. And for me, it was really easy to kind of to see the obsession and the compulsion and the stuff that really fitted with my idea of mental illness, because one of my parents is a psychiatrist, so it just that made sense to me. And the stuff about the physical compulsion, I didn't understand what that was at all when I first came in. I thought that addiction involved having a dependency on a substance, and that's a totally different thing, you know. The physical aspect of the disease, as far as I'm concerned, you know, is that moment when I go to the pub and I have one pint and then I've got to have another and I've got to have another and I've got to have another, and then I'm planning going home to go and use the thing that I really want to use. You know, that bit. The bit that my friends at work don't do, they have half a glass of wine and go back to work for the afternoon. But for me, that would be using at lunchtime, using alcohol at lunchtime, an obsession with it all day, and then got to have another all of the evening. So the fact it was a disease was so totally forgiving. I think I have to stop in a minute. I've got a little while. I guess what I want to say is, it is true, if you're new, you never have to use again. People said a few things to me at my first meeting. They said, keep coming back, you know, keep coming back. We're in London and there's 250 meetings a week in London. There are meetings everywhere, and if you think this one's rubbish, go to another one tomorrow and see what you think. The other thing they said to me, was to find a sponsor. That was really clear, you know? Find a sponsor, work the steps, do service, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. And it worked. I'm 2 years and 9 months today, actually. It's brilliant. And I'm really glad to be here. I'm just really glad to have another day clean, you know? And someone said to me just before, he said, there's a lot of love in this room. And that's my experience. You know, what I've got in this fellowship is I've got a kind of unconditional love that I never experienced before. Like, properly unconditional. and I'm really, really grateful for that. Thanks for helping me stay clean.